We got used to seeing legal grows of marijuana pop up around the region when our states passed laws allowing recreational use of the drug. Then the federal government lifted its ban on hemp, the non-stoner version of the cannabis plant. Now it grows in many places in the region. The way to tell one from the other, hemp grows out in the open, not behind those high fences. And a lot of it grows out there. A few drives in the country around the region show quite a supply of hemp and maybe an oversupply. Let's delve into the growth of the industry and its signature plant. We have two guests with us. Kristen Nichols is the editor of Hemp Industry Daily. Welcome, Kristen.
Thanks for having me.
Chase Nobles is here as well, the co-founder and co-CEO of Kush.com. Welcome, Chase.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. So each of you in turn, if you can start, Kristen, start us off about how Hemp Industry Daily got started, how long there's been a Hemp Industry Daily.
Okay, we got started in 2017. We're a spinoff of Marijuana Business Daily. It's a different commodity, a different crop, and they wanted to do a new sector that just looked really at this different plant that has different market dynamics, as you point out. So we're an MJ Biz spinoff, looking only at hemp producers and the hemp supply chain.
So in the 2 years that you've been doing this, though, as Hemp Business Daily, it just seems like the topics are coming fast and furious, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It really does in many ways feel like the larger cannabis industry 10 years ago. A lot of uncertainty, market dynamics, and no real market leaders, and a lot of questions about where this market's going to shake out and what it's going to look like.
So Chase Nobles, come in here and tell us about Kush.com and your involvement in hemp as opposed to cannabis, marijuana.
Sure, yeah. So we're a wholesale trading platform for the hemp and cannabis industry. Similar to Marijuana Business Daily, we got our start in the cannabis industry and then expanded into hemp, especially with the federal legalization.
And what have you found about trying to deal with the hemp market in its early days?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, there's a lot of similarities to the cannabis market, but at a much bigger scale. With national legalization and interstate commerce are opening up, you're seeing the same challenges, but at a much larger scale.
Well, when you think about it, I guess I hadn't, you know, it's not just the states that had legal marijuana before. We're talking about all 50 states now can grow hemp, right? Or the ones that are able to anyway.
Yes. Yep. So there's a number of different states and that have opened up their own state regulations, and every state's a little bit different. But yes, we did legalize federally. So ideally, all 50 states will be growing hemp in the near future.
Kristen Nichols, is it still the Wild West in hemp and cannabis? Is this a market very much still in the early stages?
Absolutely. There's something like 1,800 companies that make CBD products. That's a derivative of the hemp plant, or hemp-derived CBD can come from either. That's the biggest of those companies has less than 10% of that market. So we really don't see any market leaders yet. A lot of entrants. A lot of folks getting in. What that does to the market is going to be real interesting to watch. There's so many different dynamics with a federally legal crop than you see in cannabis, which is still a state-by-state patchwork. As you mentioned, like because it's federally legal, things have opened up on a scale that you can't imagine, really, if you're in the cannabis business, not only selling across state lines, looking at national distribution, looking at mainline retailers, the grocery market, the convenience store market, spas and hotels, all kinds of places are open to you that were not open to you before. That is why you're seeing this enormous interest in getting into hemp. It's not really a different plant, and the products really aren't superior or different in many ways. It's really just those opportunities that still are off limits for marijuana or cannabis producers, even in states with pretty mature markets like Oregon.
Kristen, to your knowledge, has anybody gotten out of the marijuana business and into the hemp business just because it's easier to get into or easier to you know, not have to worry about legalization and not?
Absolutely. A ton are pivoting over. Lots of market forces, of course, not only for these new opportunities. There's lots of things there's a price compression, of course, in marijuana production. If you're a farmer or growers or cultivators, you are right in the middle of right there in Oregon, seeing a lot of a wholesale price collapse almost in this market. We're still thinking that might happen to hemp products, but it's not there yet. So cannabis, like any other plant, is a commodity. There's a famous agronomist at the University of Kentucky who says the American farmer is so good they can grow the money right out of anything. And what he means by that is farmers, cultivators, growers are going to get the highest value for their land, the highest per acre profit, of course. Wherever that market heads, that's where they pivot. So we are seeing people from the marijuana business pivot entirely to hemp or partially to hemp to kind of hedge their bets, not knowing where the market's going to head.
We're getting insights into the hemp business here on the Jefferson Exchange from Kristen Nichols, the editor of Hemp Industry Daily, which sped off from Marijuana Industry Daily. Chase Nobles is with us as well. He's with the hemp processor, Kush.com. He is a co-founder, co-CEO. You can join the conversation on the exchange. Many questions you may have about hemp and its many uses. Well, we have some people who can answer some of those. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Chase, let me hear your perspective on that as well, about people who might be shifting over from marijuana to hemp.
Well, yeah, it's a different scale and a different regulatory framework. And so what we've seen in cannabis, especially in the state of Washington, where we're based out of, there's pretty large restrictions on how much you can grow. In hemp, you know, you're judging based on acres. In cannabis or marijuana, you're judging based on square feet most of the time. And so large-scale farmers can actually grow at a large scale now, and that's what we're seeing in the hemp industry. But a lot of farmers have pivoted from cannabis to hemp. But then we've also seen many traditional farmers growing hay or spinach or even corn, allocating acreage to experiment with hemp. The thing is, whenever they allocate acreage, they're not talking about 3-4 acres. They're talking about 10, 20, 30, or 100 200 acres.
That was my next question, was whether people are not only moving away from marijuana, but also moving away from other crops. And your answer is yes. And it sounds like on a pretty good size scale as well.
Yeah. And that's something we're digging further into, but we've actually heard the price of hay is jumping up a fair amount in certain local ag markets. And a part of that is because many of the hay farmers have actually started growing hemp. And so there's not as much hay, but there's a lot of hemp coming soon.
So the marijuana market, being older than the hemp market, at least in the states where it's legal, was that on its way to settling in a little bit? Was there a bit of a weed out going on? Pardon the expression, weed out, where things were shaking out. You were getting more stability in the market, or did hemp upset that, or what has it been the actual trend as you see it, Chase?
Absolutely. You know, there's been a major shakeout in the markets that are a little bit older, like Washington and Colorado. Washington has been on a price compression for the last 3-4 years, and they're finally starting to see prices rise as many of the farmers have either pivoted to other crops or started growing less, which has led to not quite a shortage, but what's leading towards a bit of a shortage, which is obviously going to increase the price in that market. So we have started to see stabilization with the market maturing, but hemp is right on the early phase. So, you know, that market, we expect to have a lot of price compression in it. And I think Kristen's seeing the same thing.
So Kristen, when you talk about no real market leaders, what role would a market, well, obviously as a leader, but I mean, what do you mean when you say market leader?
Oh, sorry. I meant it kind of in finished goods, not in production. Now, I want to add one thing to what Chase pointed out that's important about large-scale farmers pivoting to this crop. Because it's a part of a much bigger economy, you cannot separate agriculture's interest in hemp from bigger pressures going on. Don't forget, they're in a big, nasty trade war right now with China. American farmers are sitting on billions with a B of soybeans they cannot sell. There's enormous price collapse in corn, wheat, soybeans, dairy. There's estimated 3 or 4 dairies going out of business every day in the state of Wisconsin. So folks from all kinds of industries, not just marijuana, are looking to this as a potential hedge against larger uncertainty. We see a lot of interest, particularly in the southeastern United States, tobacco country, tobacco farmers looking for a hedge as that market is really a fraction of what it ever was. So when I say market leader, I don't think that there's going to be a market leader cultivator. I do think there will be market leaders in finished product goods.
Okay. Well, let's talk about finished products then, because we got a question here from Pete, no town given, via email, who says, what else are they using hemp for? Do they still make rope out of this, or is it all about CBD? What do you say, Kristen?
No, it's all CBD. There is a narrative you frequently hear, which is, okay, the founding fathers all grew hemp. It was a huge crop. And then the drug war banned it, and now we don't use it anymore, even though we used to use it for all kinds of stuff. But that narrative leaves out about 100 years of the Industrial Revolution, and there's a reason that there's not a strong market yet for the industrial components. I think, frankly, rope and stuff is never coming back. We don't need big sail rigging ships anymore. That's not how we get stuff around the world. But there is potential for things like biofuels and bioplastics and components and things like automobile construction. But right now, hemp is still not price competitive with other natural fibers. So that's why we surveyed farmers last year, and we found, asked them what they were growing hemp for. It's somewhere like 90% for the flower. Now, not just CBD. There's other cannabinoids in there. But flower production versus, you know, the big fibers for rope or grain for things like granola bars.
And how is CBD oil gotten from the hemp plant?
Sure, I could take that one.
Go ahead, Chase.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Yeah. So there when you harvest a hemp crop, you have to take the stems out of it. If you want to make CBD oil specifically, you have to, you know, buck it and take the flowers off of the stem. And then you dry all of that, and you end up sending it to an extraction company. Those extraction companies have many different methods, but it's really pulling the essential oils out of the plant, and that's kind of the second piece of the supply chain there.
All right, so the extraction company, sounds like this is the place to be making some money in the hemp industry at the moment.
It is. It is a way of making money, but as Kristen has mentioned, you know, there's so many new entrants to the finished goods category, and there's no clear market leader right now. And so there's a lot of volatility right there. So as those market leaders start to emerge, those contracts get bigger. And as these large national distribution and retail outlets begin to grow, there'll be more stability in that sector of the market.
I have seen the product hemp oil out there too. And I had a house guest this morning ask the same thing. Is hemp oil the same thing as CBD oil?
Most of the time.
Go ahead, Kristen.
This is what I would say. I don't blame anybody for being confused by the labels. When something's in the black market, you can understand why people aren't 100% all the same on what they're calling it. Hemp seeds or the grain, you can press them to make an oily product, something like a canola or chia seed kind of thing. You could press it and oil will come. So there is hemp oil that doesn't contain any cannabinoids. It's like a cooking oil, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you can see why people often label that hemp oil. That's entirely legal, always has been. But if the molecule that Chase is talking about, once you extract it, it's similar to the THC molecule. It loves fat. You can combine it with a carrier oil, like a olive, not olive oil you could use, but you could, a lot of folks use coconut oil or other oils to carry that cannabinoid, and that's CBD oil, but they're broadly called hemp oil or CBD oil interchangeably, and there's a lot of market confusion. When you say your house guest wasn't sure what the difference is, I would say a lot of folks are not sure what the difference is. You've got something on a shelf, and you're not sure, is this the stuff I keep hearing about?
Chase, you were about to add something?
Yeah, that's one of the things that's really interesting about this market, too, is hemp oil's been around for a long time, right, Kristen? And so when it comes to actually advertising CBD products, many large advertisers are still not in the same place about what they do and don't allow to advertise. And so you'll see people calling it everything from – you'll see people calling CBD oil – everything from hemp oil to hemp extract to CBD extract, mm-hmm. full spectrum. You'll see them call it different names. Sometimes that's a way to get through to different distribution outlets as well.
And just for the folks who are coming in on the ground floor, we're talking about the hemp industry with Kristen Nichols, the editor of Hemp Industry Daily, and Chase Nobles, who's the co-founder, co-CEO of Kush.com, based in Washington State. Join us on the exchange, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. And now to go really macro, when we're talking about CBD, it's cannabidiol, and it is not the same thing as THC. It has what appear to be some therapeutic effects, but not a high like you get from THC. Am I on the right track there?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. So what have the health benefits been proven at all? Kristen, do we know for sure that CBD has some FDA approval for certain categories of use?
Well, if you want to test a CBD product to treat any ailment that you can imagine, you got to get in a long line because there are literally hundreds of products right now in FDA trials. We know that CBD probably has some anti-inflammatory properties, and right now it's approved only to treat one thing, though. That is a couple forms of pretty severe childhood epilepsy. They're not really sure what it does to the brain, but it appears to have powerful effects for children that suffer from certain kinds of severe seizures. There's also some trials that we expect will head to market here within the next year or two for multiple sclerosis and some other things. But people are anecdotally finding a lot of relief for pretty much any ailment you can imagine. So if you want to know whether it does this or that, you can find folks who say it does. You can find folks who says it's snake oil, and we have to all just kind of sit by and wait till FDA trials go through and find what's proven.
Kristen, were those trials delayed by the fact that hemp was lumped in with marijuana all those years? I mean, was it basically held back from testing because of the proscription against marijuana that still stands at the federal level?
Probably, a couple points to point out. Number one, when you say it's been banned for research in the U.S., or hard to research for the U.S. Most research in this country comes from universities and comes from the National Institutes for Health. National Institutes for Health is a federal agency, and as long as something is Schedule 1 means no medical benefit, no medical use, no valid use for medicine. That means that any NIH-funded study that is not open, and also means that universities, which rely a lot on the federal government for funding, are not going to be devoting money. That has changed instantaneously with the passage of the Farm Bill. From Harvard to the smallest community college, folks are looking at what this plant can do. So it is probably why we don't know much about it.
And we have that big hemp institute opening up at Oregon State University as well, which is actually a resumption of something from decades ago. We have a phone call here. Let's bring in Jeff in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking hemp with Kristen Nichols and Chase Nobles. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning. Yeah. My question is, around the valley, I see most of the, if not, well, nearly all of the hemp being grown. They put down what looks like Visqueen plastic all over the ground and plant the hemp in holes in the plastic. And it adds up, from what I've seen, it has to add up to miles and miles of Visqueen plastic, and that stuff doesn't last forever. It has to be disposed of, I would guess. I wonder what the thoughts are on that. That doesn't seem very good to me. And also, why not use some form of a biodegradable mulch or something rather than the plastic.
Mm-hmm. Okay, question we've heard a couple times already. Thanks for that, Jeff. And why don't we take that up with Chase?
Sure. Yeah. When you look at agriculture as a whole, there's all kinds of different methods, and it seems like every farm grows a little bit differently. We've seen the same thing, and I'm sure there are better ways to do to grow that more environmentally conscious. But for a lot of farms, they're trying to mitigate their risk, and some of that risk involves having too much overgrowth from below, or irrigation, things like that. So that's the reason that they're doing that. But you are correct. I'm sure there are better environmentally conscious ways to produce.
Well, and we have a similar email from Rick Notown, given he asks about, he says, it makes hemp look like another ecological disaster, at least in the Rogue Valley. So a lot of concern out there. Are you hearing the same thing, Kristen, about the plastic?
Yeah, well, I want to point out that it brings up two important points about hemp. First off, this is how strawberries are commercially grown, and a lot of crops that you see are commercially grown. And the reason is to reduce weed pressure. there is a common misconception, even among pretty savvy farmers, that hemp doesn't need, you know, hemp doesn't, there's no weeds, it doesn't need pesticides, it doesn't need fertilizer, it just grows like magic. That certainly is not true. You're seeing like intense pest and weed pressure in lots of different markets. That plastic helps keep it down and get just the you know, flowery bushes that you want. So a lot of concern that if it's a new crop in your area, you're not used to seeing large-scale strawberry or other berry, look, these low shrubby kinds of plants around, it does look like, whoa, that looks like a lot of plastic. And certainly there is going to be, I would say, the hemp industry, to its credit, really is interested in finding like biodegradable solutions and more environmentally friendly solutions that, like Chase mentioned. The question is, where do those price compare otherwise, and how are you going to make folks use that? The kind of advantage, I guess, to growing marijuana in smaller places inside is you can control that pest pressure in a much easier way than you can when you're growing hundreds of acres outside.
Could you make a hemp barrier? I mean, hemp can be made into fabric pretty easily, can't it?
I'm sure you could. I don't know if that hemp fabric would exist at the scale it needs to right now to be able to do that. And the other piece of this is, you know, hemp is a high value crop compared to other crops, and so for a farm, you know, a big part of it is to mitigate risk to their crop, and you know, it can be catastrophic whenever you do have a crop that becomes valueless. You know, in Central Oregon recently, there was a big hailstorm that damaged over $20 million worth of hemp crops. And so many of these farms are already being hurt by international farming pressure on price. And so this is a somewhat of a big hope for them growing hemp. And so if they can reduce that risk, that's a big part of it.
Kristen, you said earlier you don't see a wholesale price collapse yet. Obviously, when you get a bunch of plants damaged, as we just heard from Chase in Central Oregon, you might see a difference in price. But is there something you're waiting to see before you think you'll predict a price collapse within the hemp business?
I think there will be a lot of price pressure, and it will eventually collapse to any commodity. But I think there's a big question, as everybody's putting these big, pretty hemp plants in the ground, is the processing bottleneck. Even like toll extractors, that is definitely the biggest, fastest booming part of the hemp industry. Everybody popping up to get those hemp flowers and get the CBD out of it. But whether there will be enough capacity for all this hemp coming in, also, it's a very labor-intensive crop.
Okay.
So what are people's harvest plans to get these? It's hard. Most hemp for CBD is hand-harvested.
Okay, so a lot of issues with labor and planting and processing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Kristen Nichols and Chase Nobles, for letting us know about hemp.